Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. Today I'm joined by Pete from Path Factory, and I could not be more excited for him to give us a practical breakdown of exactly how he implemented an ABM program at Path Factory using their tools and tripled pipeline in just his first year. So Pete, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Mason. Honored to be here and excited to jump into it.
Yeah, man, I've been following you for a while, and I just feel like you keep landing at companies that do ABM incredibly well. And I know that you've got a very large hand in building out some of those programs. So I'm excited to dig into kind of the 101 version that helped you kind of get some of your ABM programs started. So that said, like, what are we talking through today?
Yeah, so I wanted to pick out an example of how I like to get started with ABM, knowing that I think we fall in love with the idea of doing these super strategic, overly creative ABM programs with a bunch of channels and tactics and fancy concepts. And you might go hire a design or creative agency to help you build out something crazy. I've done that. And Mason, if we want, if time allows, I can get into some of those examples too. Like, I created in a past life, we created a campaign around, we were marketing to records managers, and we created this runaway file concept. I still to this day love it. And we had like YouTube videos and short, like 90 second ads and stuff that went into different stats and stuff we found from studies and conversations. And then we actually created like little mini runaway file characters that we'd send to people as like a direct mail opener. And it was like a figure with a file on his head. And it sounds crazy, but it's attention grabbing, right? But those campaigns take time and they're hard to produce and candidly budget. So what we want to talk about today, or what I'm going to dig in deeper, is how we looked at where we were having success in terms of customers, the strategies we took to create content that would be relevant to that customer ICP, and then some of the channels and tactics that we use to reach them.
I love it. So let's start with the biggest question for everybody. Like, how did you even determine who to target in your ABM program?
Yeah, it's probably the million-dollar question, right? Probably where ABM at its core either succeeds or fails. For us, what we started with, and I've been at Path Factory for close to a year now, not quite a year yet. The first question I had when I joined was, where are we having success? So in its very tactical kind of basic form, we pulled up Salesforce, which is a CRM we use, and we literally just for the last, I want to say 18 to 24 months, we pulled customer data. Where were, and we looked at twofold. We looked at where is all the pipeline opportunities won or lost being sourced from in terms of different profile things like verticals. And then we looked at closed won, and we did that same level of analysis. And what we found was there are certain verticals where we seem to have a higher propensity. I don't think that's unique to any business these days. So then our ABM strategy in its basic form started with, hey, I have to start somewhere. I would love to eventually do signal-based or trigger-based campaigns, which I know, Mason, you talk a lot about things like past champions, and that's where we're now iterating to, by the way, future episode. But our initial kind of walk into ABM was vertical-based campaigns based on where we've had highest propensity. And as I said, we did that basically through just pulling customer data. And then once we pulled that data, we started using, you know, data aggregation tools like ZoomInfo to help us start building out lookalike audiences, as well as the types of profiles within those accounts that we wanted to reach.
I love it. And one of the things that it seems very intuitive, but I think most people, when they think about looking back in ICP development, they almost only look at closed lost. But I love the specific framing to call out. We didn't just look at closed won, but we also looked at like how much pipeline were we generating in specific verticals to then compare the two. Because ideally, you're generating a lot of pipeline and it's closed won at a high rate. Can you elaborate on why you actually looked at both for just a moment?
Yeah, well, think about it, right? So the typical best practice you hear from most right? Companies, when they're thinking about how do they model a waterfall or model how much revenue and pipeline they need to bring in, they assume they're going to lose 80% of their opportunities. And there's a variety of reasons for that, right? So if you assume you're only going to win 20% of your business as like the standard kind of pipeline multiplier that I think we all kind of by default use these days, yeah. Then for me, I was very interested to see where are we seeing interest? Where are we driving engagement historically? And then, you know, as we think full funnel, because ABM in my mind, by the way, doesn't just stop at getting people in. It's how do you close those deals? And that's a whole, you know, separate ABM conversation we have around improving conversion rates. And even once they become a customer, I think of that also. Customer onboarding is its own ABM motion. But for us, it was ultimately as a marketer, I'm gold on how do I create more pipeline for the business? If I see that these segments are showing the most engagement and the most potential interest, then I want to figure out how to get more of those. And then vice versa, how do we convert more of those? So that was the logic behind it.
Yeah. I just think that's so smart, because if you find this like subset of customers that you close a ton of, but they're really hard to find, it's a really difficult ABM program. But if you strike that balance of we can source a lot of this pipeline and they close well, then you've struck gold. So
yeah, now we one of the sorry, I cut you off, Mason. I apologize.
No,
one of the things is that everyone loves to do like close lost or wake the dead, I think is a fancy phrase I've heard, and love those. But what about all those opportunities you've sourced that might be stuck in, you know, a silo or just stuck in the infinity of not really taking any action? And then how do you find more like that? Like, it's so hard nowadays to get engagement and to get attention. If you see there's certain subsets of your audience that are showing high levels of engagement, maybe it's tech, maybe it's SaaS, maybe it's cybersecurity or healthcare, I would go deeper into those. And there's a multitude of things that we can all do to drive more revenue. One is obviously create more top of the funnel. Another one could be just focusing on sales enablement, offers, content, and closing more deals. So if I can get more pipeline based on a subsegment of an audience that I know is already engaged more effectively, then I would turn my attention to just how do I convert more of it. So that's been our focus. I'm not saying we perfected it, because candidly, y'all, we haven't. But that was the focus. And I can tell all of you ahead of time on this call that I'm confident it's working, in that we've generated more inbound leads year over year since I've been here. We've generated more pipeline year over year since I've been here. So I'm very confident that this hypothesis is working. Where our focus now is, as we look forward to next year, 2025, is how do we convert more of the pipeline we're sourcing?
I love it. So now we understand where we're sourcing the audience. The next question becomes, how do we get in front of them? So how did you actually think through the distribution channel mix to engage this audience?
Yeah, it's a great question. So it was a couple of things. Now, I have the benefit of, at PathFactor, I market traditionally to B2B marketers. As a B2B marketer, I kind of have the benefit of having a lot of knowledge about where B2B marketers spend time and things like that. So it made a lot of the customer insight or customer research phase easier. But just for context, for anyone that's listening who it's not as straightforward, in past lives where I've marketed to IT buyers, developers, things of that nature, I've done a few things. I've used audience research tools like a SparkToro, and I've used tools like that to try to understand the different influencers or channels or topics that those potential buyers are researching. The more basic, easier thing to do, although I use the word easy in quotations or air marks, is actually getting on the phone and talking to your customers. Now, everyone says that. Y'all, it's not as easy as it sounds. One, because customers are busy and oftentimes you won't even get a response. And then it's like, what questions do you ask? For me, just as a subset for all of you, like some of the questions I like to ask are, first off, basic things. Where do you spend time? Give me two or three influencers or communities or channels that you predominantly go to get insight. And then I'll kind of do some basic, more market intelligence things separate from this, which are like, how do you describe what we do and things like that. But the key with customer research is making sure you ask the right questions. And I try to go in with like five or six. I don't try to go in with a laundry list that Mason would take you 45 minutes on a call with me. That's not great either. And then I just try to reward them with a personal gift or lunch or something, just, you know, as a token. And then there's the other thing I've tried is tools like Winter to do surveys. So like if I'm struggling to get customer feedback or if I'm struggling to get audience research through tools like SparkToro, I'll use Winter tactically as another tool where you can go in, type in your audience, and you can put like survey questions and get responses to different things. So I've used that variety of options to try to get insight around, in my case of B2B marketers, I know LinkedIn is a great channel. So I'm sort of jumping to the answer. But if I'm going after developers or IT buyers and I'm not sure, I would use those strategies, Mason, to get more information on where do I need to place bets in terms of channels, the types of content topics and things of that nature that they would find interesting, if that helps.
No, that's super helpful. Yeah, I mean, understanding obviously where your buyer lives is the most critical piece, but as you outlined, you and I points can live a bit on easy mode because we're just essentially marketing to ourselves. Yeah. So it's helpful for people that are in more complex or technical or difficult to reach buying environments to understand how are we able to find those channels. So again, for us, we know LinkedIn, communities, podcasts, things along those lines, great channels to reach buyers, webinars as it relates to B2B marketers. So that's super helpful. The next question is then, what do you actually send them to? Like, what's the content that actually helps them understand the value of PathFactor?
Let me get into that. So in the example I'm using, there were a subset of verticals that we prioritized. So I'll just pick on cybersecurity as being one, right? Cybersecurity, great space, a lot of funding. Companies have done really well. And obviously with malware and attacks and things of that nature, I mean, cybersecurity is about as hot of an industry as it's been for quite a while. And probably, by the way, will not diminish anytime in the near future. So for us, one of the benefits I have working at PathFactory, for those that are unaware, is, and I don't want to make this a product pitch, so I'm going to go 10 seconds, Mason, or less, is one of the benefits I have of working at PathFactory is PathFactory helps me see what content is resonating. There's some other great tools, by the way, that help you do this. Hushly, Air Traffic Control, there's a few others. Some are focused on different ecosystems of tools you're using, et cetera. But I'm a big fan of these tools, any of these tools, don't care which one you use, to help you understand the types of content that's previously historically being engaged with. That helps you start to refine further, Mason. So for example, I use the Netflix example. If I know that Pete and Mason love Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, as you probably know, every time you log into Netflix after that, anything tied to Arnold Schwarzenegger or someone like him, like Sylvester Stallone or whomever, you will see 37 more recommendations just like that. PathFactory, Air Traffic Control, and some of these other tools, in essence, work that way. So think of it now as I had the benefit of knowing I want to go after cybersecurity. I've done research on cybersecurity space. I built the audience of accounts I want to go after. So I had two questions. Question one was, what content can I create or reuse to best reach them? And then what channels? So in terms of content, using PathFactor or other tools, Google Analytics, if you're just looking at web traffic and which of your pages has the most hits or content assets have the most hits, we knew that, for example, our benchmark report. And what that was, we took all of our customer insight on an annual basis and we were, Mason, essence, summarizing what content assets are the best. If that isn't an option for all of you, then I would look at things like which webinar and webinar topics have had the most engagement historically, et cetera. And for us, we repurposed that report for cybersecurity. So we quickly, within about 3 to 4 weeks, we recut the data, Mason, and we had our cybersecurity version of that same report. So we just filtered our customer base right on previous cybersecurity customers. So that was like anchor asset one. The other anchor assets we had was we found a cybersecurity use case and case study that made it a lot easier, since intentionally we picked verticals because we knew we had vertical cuts of customers. We cut that up into different snippets like podcasts and things like that. Or excuse me, we cut that into like snippets for LinkedIn posts and stuff that didn't come out right. And then we looked at webinars that, while they might be a little bit more generic, the recordings, they were still ultimately relevant. And PathFactory's usage helped us kind of narrow those things down. So then it came to channels and what channels do we want to use? So for us, the predominant channel was LinkedIn. So we did two things. We had LinkedIn organic posts from different members of the PathFactory team posting, hey, we got this report available. It's cybersecurity focused. Take a look. And we were teasing like, there's more of these vertical cuts coming. We then worked with our LinkedIn ad consultant, just because my team is very little. So we brought in a consultant that helps us manage our LinkedIn campaigns. We took that target audience of accounts that we want to go after in LinkedIn. And we're running a series of a variety of LinkedIn ads where I would describe it to the audience as 50% of the ads are product awareness. So when we're marketing to the cybersecurity audience, think of some of those ads as very basic. Here's what PathFactory does. Here's the potential value of PathFactory to you, things of that nature. And then the other 50% of those ads are offer-based. Hey, did you know that 37% of cybersecurity buyers prefer webinar content over blog content or whatever it is? I'm, by the way, totally making that up. And maybe another offer Mason was like, here's a $50 gift card to take a meeting, right? We definitely have been testing those incentives at, and even on those incentives, we're only serving those offers up as accounts are engaging with us. We'll get into measurements. So we'll talk about that here in a bit. I don't want to like steal that thunder, Mason, but obviously you can guess there's certain measurements we're looking at for that as we're refining our ad strategy and things like that. And then to supplement the LinkedIn organic and paid strategy, we're predominantly relying on email from marketing and from our sales and BDR team. There's future ideas I have to refine this further, like direct mail campaigns and things of that nature. But to get started and not having this overly crazy, take 3 to 6 months to build out type of campaign, that was the approach that we took. It took about, I'd say, from inception to execution, 4 to 5 weeks. And it has yielded most of our reports, vertical or the major one, have had thousands of views. When I joined Path Factory, we were averaging, for simple terms, let's just say we're averaging 10 inbound leads a month. LinkedIn has added another 10 on top of that since we've executed this strategy. So in essence, LinkedIn alone has helped double our inbound lead volume, in large part because we're running more tactically focused ads that are adding value through that mix that I described earlier. And we have content that's really relevant to that audience that's more meaningful, personal, and relevant to the needs of like a cybersecurity marketer or healthcare marketer. So hopefully that helps. That's a lot.
No, I mean, that's super helpful. And again, we always tell people like start with what you have today so you can actually execute faster. And that was just such a clear example of we had this industry report, we recut it, and you didn't start from scratch. Like you probably changed up like 30% of it. And like that was then very specific to that audience and you could get it out the door in like 3-4 weeks. And I love the framing of anchor asset. Like that became the thing that we always drive people to. We've done that with a couple, I call it the FAQ ABM. It's like you create a specific page that is very specific to that vertical. And then at the bottom, you have all your frequently asked questions and you link out to all the content that does a deep dive. But you've got the anchor page. It's like, this is what we want to drive all of our traffic to.
And we do something similar. So think of it as the anchor asset was one of the predominant offers that we were just trying to drive engagement with. And our objective with a lot of those ads was, Mason, let's just assume you never click the ad, which by the way, for most of us, we probably never will. How do I give you value in that ad? So I'm creating brand memory without having to force you to click. So for example, I would say, hey, Mason, did you know that 37% of cybersecurity buyers prefer this content format? But I'm giving you that info in the ad itself.
Yep.
So even though you don't click it, you're still getting that. Now, if you were to click it, I'm sending you to a very dynamic, personalized page for you and cybersecurity marketers like you that has that anchor asset. And then very similar to that Netflix example, because of the beauty of our own tool, we're providing you with other relevant content tied to cybersecurity marketing, such as that cybersecurity customer case study, these relevant webinars and stuff. And then as you're engaging with some of that content, Path Factory will auto dynamic other content like that. So if you were to visit that page again in a week or 2 weeks, assuming how you're engaging with stuff, Mason, now it's suggesting and recommending other stuff, very similar to that Netflix example. So the idea is like, how do we continue to make that page? A lot of AI focus and use cases on the copy on a page. Our focus with our product is on the content and the offers. And in my mind, like at the end of the day, marketing is, how do I drive engagement and keep you engaged? Everyone focuses on like email copy and landing page copy. Why I love Path Factory is we're focused on the shit that people actually care about, which is the content, the offers. So we really are that Netflix engine in a sense. And for me personally, since I spend way too much time on those services, I love that every time I go to something like that from a Path Factory experience, for example, it's always personalized. So Mason, totally agree with you. That's how we do it. That's how I've done it in past lives. And when it's executed well, without being crazy fancy, it can work very effectively.
I love it. So let's go ahead and dig into results. Like once you've gotten this launched and again, very focused on a very specific vertical, like what you've already alluded to, like doubling the inbound opportunities. So that's pretty significant. But what were some of the other results you guys have been able to generate?
Yeah. So like I said, our overall we are right now sourcing about $10 in pipeline for every dollar I'm spending in marketing. That's hard to beat. That's like, for me, that's the mecca.
Yeah.
Because that means your CAC and stuff will be in line, depending on your ACVs and things like that. But that I'm very focused on how I make sure that we don't have crazy spend to bring in pipeline. And the most important metrics for me, first and foremost, is of that named account list, what percentage of the accounts are engaging? So we're using a mix of our own tool, which shows us content engagement at the individual level and the account level, to be able to see, are those accounts engaging, Mason? If you don't have that, you can do it through a variety of like Google Analytics, your CRM, and just based on inbound responses and outbound responses and stuff. The second measurement we were looking at was just engagement on our ads and in our organic posts. So Mason, as you probably know, or anyone that knows has done LinkedIn ads and stuff, there is a short-term benefit you get from using ads on LinkedIn is you'll get real-time feedback. So we were seeing comments like, this is great. Or I was getting DMs like, this report's awesome. Please more like that. You know, and by the way, not all the feedback was great. There were a couple of comments that were, hey, like this report should dig deeper into this. Well, that insight's just as valuable to me. And by the way, I don't pretend to have the best content ever. Like there's always ideas we don't think of, et cetera. But that feedback was just as valuable to me. One, because it showed that they actually still took the time to read it and engage with it. But two, they're giving our team ideas of how we can engage and make this better for people in the future. So that was one of the measurement metrics, Mason, for us in the short term was like, how are people engaging with it? What is their feedback? How do we make things better? And then we were using LinkedIn itself to show us that account level engagement, right? We do use Sixth Sense. So Sixth Sense was providing us with initially what level of intent or engagement those accounts had. As we were running these campaigns, we were starting to see obviously increased intent and increased scoring based on overall level of engagement. So it was that mix of things. Now, if you don't have Sixth Sense or demand-based or tools like that, I don't think it's necessary a necessity to obviously launch a campaign like this with those tools. But if you do, the benefit is it helps show you engagement scores and it helps give you an idea of as you're reaching and engaging these accounts, are they moving along in their quote-unquote buyer journey, even though we all know buyer journeys are not linear. And then the core metrics are pipeline. For me, the core metrics are inbound, pipeline sourced, pipeline closed. As I mentioned, I don't want to really get into the real numbers, but we've seen our inbound lead volume in some months triple in my year here. That's, I'm very confident in saying in large part that's due to the efforts that we're running. Coupled with, we do ask things like, how did you hear about us? So we're on the form, on the inbound form. So we see more of a mention on things like Mason's podcast or LinkedIn, Google search, right? So we're looking for those trends and trying to see more of the trend lines tie to the stuff we're doing. We are looking at engagement on all the content we're producing, and we've seen that increase dramatically. And then obviously overall pipeline. As I mentioned, we created more pipeline in the first three quarters of this year than we did all of last year. I'm pretty proud of that. That's the thing I'm most proud of. You know, full disclosure, we don't have it all figured out. We probably, like a lot of businesses out there, we are trying to figure out how we increase our win rates. It is probably the biggest focus we have going forward. But Mason, if I look at those other metrics and an overall engagement, I'm pretty satisfied with how the engine's going. And I tell the marketing team all the time, it's a very small team, 3 or 4 full-time people on the team. The fact that we're able to generate those types of results in 3 quarters is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'll say so. And again, it's one of those things where you now have so much pipeline and the challenge is improving win rates. That's a way better problem to solve than like we don't have enough pipeline, but we close at like 40%. So,
I mean, I would love a 40% win rate. that's like the mecca of the mecca. But yeah, I've worked in organizations where we've sourced 70% of the pipeline from inbound. I mean, that's like the holy grail.
Yeah.
But if you're closing 10%, you're going to have to create more pipeline to get to your targets, and you have a highly inefficient engine. So the biggest problem I had to fix coming into PathFactor, and the reason I executed the play I described, Mason, was we had to create more pipeline. So that was the initial objective I had to solve for.
Yeah.
That is why we've executed these industry-based campaigns, looking at past customers and things like that. As I look forward to 2025, we're not going to change these motions. What we will start to evolve to is we'll start evolving more signal-based, as I mentioned earlier. We can get into that, Mason, if you want. I'll still run elements of these industry stuff just with refinement. Like, think of it as we'll still have industry cuts, but now with signals and triggers that refine our messaging further.
Yep.
Like, for example, hey, Mason, I see that your site has a ton of gated content. we can help remove that gating and improve the friction of for your buyer, or reduce the friction for your buyers. Like, is that something that you have interest with? And by the way, here's sites that do this, get these types of conversions. I think that's a way more compelling way to still apply that same verticalized lens with your building of your list and who you're going after, but then refining the type of value that you can educate people on and the value that you can deliver. So that's the evolution we're going to be making. And my theory or hypothesis, Mason, is that's going to lead to higher conversion rates as well, because the story and the results that we're showing are more tangible than what they are right now.
So. I love it. Last couple questions would just be, one, as you were building this out over the past 3 quarters, like, what have been some of the unexpected kind of roadblocks that hindered you from going as fast as you might have wanted to?
Oh, by far, list is always number one. Every company I've been at, I've worked for a bunch of big companies, I've worked for small companies. Getting alignment on who to go after, by far and large, is the hardest thing. And anyone that's cracked the code, like, I'm all ears. It's everyone has an opinion. So I think my best advice there is, I truly believe that marketing and RevOps should own it. Figure out what intelligence you want to use, whether it's an industry cut or data signal or data trigger cut. I don't think it necessarily matters, but you have to pick a lane, have the right people at pulling the data, and then have a communication or internal alignment meeting, just one, where you get the right parties in a room, not 100 people, get those that actually have to be in there to agree. And then once you agree, you have to be committed for at least 6 months. One other mistake I've made is we've tried to refresh or like adjust that on a quarterly basis. And in some cases, it takes 2 or 3 quarters to actually see results from these efforts. So if you try to abandon it too soon or too prematurely, you're going to optimize for short-term results, but potentially be penalizing yourself with the reality that some of these things may not show immediate short-term, but the long-term gains are greater than you realize. So I would at least try to be committing to this for 6 months. That's like issue number one, Mason, probably by far.
Yeah. And it's been honestly wild as clients have come to us to see their past ABM projects where they'd run it for a quarter and then they just leave these accounts alone and like have nothing. They just don't do anything with them. And it's like, well, you did all the work to get them like 80% of the way there and you just dropped them. So yeah, I couldn't agree more of like, yes, we want to have some conversion programs that build pipeline immediately. But like a lot of this is, I mean, especially in the context of a year, like there's budgeting cycles. So like I have tons of conversations right now where people are thinking about like Q2 of 25, but they're ending pipeline. So yeah, I couldn't agree more on just like that.
Yeah. And if you're, I know Mason, like your goal, like I always try to think tactically, how can I listen to something like this and be able to action it? If you're looking for easy places to start, you know, past customers is an easy place, like segment those by vertical, et cetera. Past champions. And there's different tools out there. I think ZoomInfo does this. I think UserGems. There's a few tools that can help you identify like past users of your platform that have left and gone to a different company. That could be an easy place to build an ABM program around. A third would be closed lost ops.
Yeah.
Or what people call wake the dead. Like it's, even if you get only 1% of those people to respond, the potential dollar impact, depending on what your ACV of that, could be humongous. So like, that's where I would start. If you're not sure where to start, I'd start with one of those three buckets. And that helps define your list building and some of these challenges that Mason and I are talking to a lot easier. And then, like I said, commit to 3 to 6. I wouldn't commit to 3. I'd commit to at least 6. If you're going to commit to 3, be very clear that all you're really doing at the 3-month mark is sharing some of the engagement metrics you're seeing so far, but you're really still running it for that additional quarter. The second challenge, which I think is often overlooked, is the content.
Yep.
Marketing at the end of the day is having something of value and then having the right distribution channels. And Mason, like the second common thing I see, at least I believe that we all make as marketers, is we default to channels and tactics. So we talk about email, we talk about ads, we talk about search or SEO. Now, what do I have of value that's going to make Mason or Pete or someone actually care and pay attention? As we talked about on this, look at content you have that's actually driven past engagement, start there. And if you're going a vertical cut, how can you cut that to be vertical? Maybe it's re-record that webinar just with a vertical spin. Seems basic or easy, but people overlook this all the time. Or figure out how you can snippet out that 45-minute webinar into like 2, 3, 4, 5-minute clips that are easily digestible on LinkedIn or via an email attachment, right? Things like that. And then, and only then, would I think about distribution channels, but don't skip the content strategy step. It is the most important thing, arguably even to some degree more important than the list itself, because if you don't have something of value, then why would I give a you know what? And then measurement is probably the other area I've had endless debates. When I've had the benefit of tools like, you know, ABM platform, if you will, those tools make ABM measurement, Mason, way easier in theory. If you don't have those tools, I look at it as three simple buckets: account engagement, and there's a variety of ways you can measure that. You could do LinkedIn ad measurement that way. You can just do responses to your campaigns, right? Inbound leads, MQLs and stuff if you use that model. And contact database growth. You can look at how many net new contacts you've added for those accounts within your database. The second would be pipeline sourced from those accounts. And obviously the third would be like funnel conversions and ultimately closed won revenue. In theory, if ABM is working effectively, it should help your conversion rates overall over time. So like Mason, in the simplest form, that's the lesson learned like I've had for measurement. But in the past, I was debating because I was like, I don't have an ABM tool, so I can't really do this. And I can't really measure engagement. So like, I shouldn't do ABM. Then I went back to basics of like, nah, there's a way to do this without having crazy tools. So anyways, those are the things I've learned. I've made all those mistakes, y'all. I think anyone that's doing ABM has made all those mistakes. And I will probably still make all those mistakes. But those are some of the ways I've tried to alleviate those mistakes going forward.
Yeah, Pete, I could not agree more on the three areas for metrics. And I love the framing of specifically like contact growth within the account, because I think about that as relationship growth. Like, more of these people know that we exist. They actually care. We have something to say. They want to hear from us. That's all great signals of account engagement that like anyone can actually measure just with a basic marketing automation platform.
Yep.
I love it. Well, Pete, thank you so much for joining me today. I think we covered off on everything for kind of the 101 version. I think we'll need to have you back for next year to see how the program continues to evolve. But if people want to find out more about you, where can they find you?
Yeah, LinkedIn's best. Happy to talk anytime, riff on ideas. Like, I love doing that stuff. That's how I've learned, is just getting on calls with people like you, Mason, and others, and just learning how other people have figured it out and then apply that to my own. So yeah,
I love it.
Reach out.
Well, Pete, again, thank you so much. This has been Scrappy ABM, and we'll see you in the next one. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.